Welcome to the PodTech SAP podcast with Vishal Sikka, who's the Senior Vice President of Architecture, the CTO of SAP's Product Technology Group. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks.
We're going to talk about SOA, Oracle, open source ecosystems. You guys have a lot going on. Yep. You're a tech guru. You're in all the activities, all the products.
Sure.
Talk about your role first. I mean, obviously, you're involved in a lot of technology. You've been exposed to all the SAP activity in the marketplace. Talk about your role and your group that you're involved in now.
So my role is I am the Senior VP and the Head of Architecture for SAP for all our applications and our platform products. And I am responsible for more or less architecture governance and coordination for all of our applications, our platform.
Kind of the next generation, the roadmap, forward thinking.
Yeah. Actually, both consolidation of the today's stuff, where we have discrepancies, redundancies, things like that, and we have a lot of those, and also the future stuff. The future stuff I do in my other role as the head of new technologies for the Product and Technology Group, which is Shai Agassi's board area.
So. Let's talk about forward thinking and consolidation and services, because they all kind of rolling in. I mean, the enterprise software market you guys dominate in. Talk about the consolidation picture. Are things consolidating? Obviously, the architecture is changing. Talk a little bit about those two bullets.
Absolutely. So I think at the end of the day, we are in a wave that's sort of a recurring wave. We are in the third wave of architecture. People often talk about mainframes and client-server and now service-oriented. At the end of the day, it really boils down to balancing between stuff that people build themselves or have consultants build for them and then stuff that they buy off the shelf. And how well can this be integrated? How easily can it be integrated? How well does it work together? That is sort of what has been the name of the game in IT as far back as we have, when we used to have MIS systems and things like that. And so SOA is a particularly promising new sort of, well, if you can call something that is, 5-6 years old new.
It's been talked about a ton.
For a long time,
Everyone's been talking about it. All these CIOs are probably like, SOA, where's the beef, right?
Yeah, and it, but it is a... it is something that has made the concept of interfaces very accessible to everyone. People talk about exposing service functionalities out of existing applications, out of new applications, making them easier to integrate, things of that sort. So it is something that is particularly interesting for us. I mean, you mentioned SAP, because we have a lot of services buried inside our application functionality. And to expose that out so people can integrate that more easily into their into their other IT environments. That is sort of what really brings the value of IT out of your existing investment.
Well, we're here in the cafeteria at SAP headquarters in California. You can hear the soda machines, everyone mulling out in the background, which is great. And you guys are a very open company now, obviously. We're in the caf. But isn't what you're talking about, the services being exposed, isn't that exposing SAP's crown jewels? I mean, SAP has been a software, enterprise software company. Why this shift? Why the shift of the services?
No, we think that over time, if you think about it, a manufacturing company in Taiwan or an insurance company in Scandinavia, there are things that they all have to do in the course of running their business. Over the last 30 years, one of the things that we have done better than by far anybody else is understanding those businesses, understanding those business processes, and encoding that into our objects, into our business processes, into our business logic, if you will. We think that that breadth of understanding of businesses worldwide across 32 industries, across companies of pretty much every size, that is something that we know, we understand, we know, and to serve that in a very, very reliable, scalable manner. So we definitely continue to preserve our advantage and our intellectual property when it comes to capturing all that into our code.
But you're recognizing the change. What you're saying is you
absolutely.
All these customers, you see it happening.
So I think even if we expose the interfaces of this thing out for others to integrate into, that ultimately it runs on our platform. Ultimately, these are our objects and services, and I think so our value, our sort of center of gravity as a process center definitely stays there. So we don't believe that it marginalizes our value in any way.
So SOA has been talked about a long time, service-oriented architectures and open services now with open source. We'll get to that in a minute. But SAP has an ESA kind of model going on,
right.
Enterprise Services Architecture, which is taking your core and exposing it out. In the long run, what does this mean? What's the forces of these technologies do to vendors? I mean, obviously, SAP is one of many vendors. You get Microsoft, Oracle, right, the obvious suspects.
So let me...
They all have suites, and what's the impact of this?
I have... So Jeff is here, and he said that think about some analogies. So I'll give you an analogy. You have TiVo, right?
Mm-hmm. I love TiVo.
You love
My
TiVo?
My kids think that's the TV.
If you think about TiVo, before TiVo, your ability to watch what you had was basically limited to programming your VCR for the specific programs that you wanted to see and then recording those, and you know, hopefully you do the right thing. Or you change your life around. I mean, we all remember must-see TV, and we change our lives around the favorite TV programs. TiVo lets you sort of compose your actual viewing on top of the existing content. This is sort of the same thing that is going on in enterprise software. The ability to build the thing that you are looking for.
Choice.
On choice. The flexibility. Being able to mold what you have in service of what you need. That I think, is the fundamental new thing about modularization and componentization.
Well, social media, the podcast in the world that we're in, it's all about users are in control. Yeah. But what you're saying is, for CIOs, they look at their market and their environment.
Right.
They're in control. So they
exactly.
don't have to buy the big, fat application.
Right.
If they want to buy just Microsoft's Word Outliner, they don't need to buy Microsoft Office.
Yeah.
That would be the example.
That is a kind of an analogy. And so if you look at it from a CIO's perspective, they have a fairly significant investment that they have made over time in, you know, in applications, in application platforms, and things like that. And over time, now they are more and more companies expect them to not only consolidate their business processes, but also come up with new stuff, measurement of their business performance, new processes that give the company a competitive differentiation, being able to cut across the company's business process silos. And all those types of things, that the burden that the CIO faces makes it very necessary that the IT infrastructure is very flexible. That is something that an ESA or an SOA provide. Now, where ESA becomes different from SOA is, we believe that our services that are encapsulated in our application functionality have some fundamental differentiation from a traditional web service. They are web services, obviously, but they are more. They have a very stable semantics to them. Across the suite, whether it is an ERP, financials, HR, materials management, CRM, supply chain, those kinds of functionalities, how these pieces lock together, how these pieces work together. We have done a great job of figuring out how these things integrate to each other, the semantics inside the services, being able to run them from a platform that is very, very reliable. These are the kinds of things that we have done to that basic services idea that makes it an enterprise service, and I think that is...
Well, reliability is key, and you talk about services and interoperability. Let's talk about that for a minute.
Right.
So the CIOs are in control. They are having choices, which actually is going to help them on the cost side too, but that's a different topic. You're exposing all these services. You guys are totally core to your business. You know your product.
Right.
But you've got to also work with open source. How is SAP looking at the open source picture? Because now CIOs are looking at open source as a viable business model.
Absolutely.
How is that playing
out?
So
I think we look at open source as an ecosystem imperative for us. We look at open source as a very important piece of the overall IT puzzle. And there are many, many different aspects to that. Obviously, we know about the success that open source operating systems have had. Some of the other elements of the stack, as you go above the operating system, with Linux, for example, but as you go above with databases, with application servers, there are a lot of very interesting development tools initiatives around Eclipse and so on. We think that with JBoss, with an app server, for a lightweight app server, similarly with the MySQL, which is one of our investments, we think that there is a lot of very interesting...
MySQL is an investment for you guys?
Yes, absolutely. It's a strategic investment. We have had an open source enterprise database called MySQL Max, which we donated to MySQL as a part of that.
So you're integrating that in?
Absolutely. We think that open source plays a very fundamental part. There are, an open source licensing compared to traditional licensing and the different variations in open source licensing, those are things that we always stay on top of. But what is more interesting compared to, for example, what an Oracle does, is our emphasis on the ecosystem. Last year, we had a very interesting realization. When we announced our partnership with the Titans, with the Ciscos, EMCs, IBMs, Intels of the world, people were very curious, what is it that you do with these guys? And it's very simple. If you think about Cisco, for example, from a CIO's perspective, they make network purchases, and the IT stack that we sit on, the network is a very big center of gravity on that. A lot of integration, a lot of messaging, security, the quality of service, those kinds of things happen inside the network. So together with Cisco, we came to the realization that that these two worlds are intersecting, that over time, there is a very interesting overlap that develops between between the network layer that Cisco owns and the application layer that we own. And so we sat down together with Cisco and figured out what are the layers that can start to consolidate as a result of SAP and Cisco talking to each other. And that is what we did. So we think that with their Aon initiative, with their application delivery initiatives, with some of the work that they have been doing on integrating voice, then these are the areas that Cisco and SAP can work together, again, by taking advantage of services exposed, of ESA in the platform, and bringing the network closer to the application world. And at the end of the day, simplifying life for the IT department, simplifying life for the CIO. If I could sit down together with the Cisco guy and simplify, consolidate some of the layers, then that is that much work that I have saved the IT department from doing. That much of the integration complexity that I have eliminated from the IT department.
When you think about it, SAP and Cisco, actually the fact that you're sitting down at that level
means
that this is serious business.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Same thing with EMC, with Intel, with Adobe on the UI side, with all these large gorilla type vendors, lifecycle management vendors like CA and Mercury and HP with OpenView and IBM with Tivoli. We think that an ecosystem that sits down together and works together, talks together, innovates together, saves time, saves money, makes it possible to
do better. What's Oracle doing in this area? Are they doing anything?
Not much. I mean, Oracle has been working with the open source world. They have talked about this whole hot pluggability concept, but we are actually doing it. We had, at our analyst relations talk last year, we actually had a very interesting comparison of the vendors that we have talked to and the vendors that Oracle has, and we believe that.
Well, there's two approaches to open source. People either mailing it in, like, hey, I'm there, checking it off some box, to say that they're doing something.
Versus actually doing.
They're actually doing and delivering
absolutely.
Product.
Yeah, and we have teams that, worked seriously together with Microsoft, together with IBM, with Intel. We have an appliance coming out, a main memory-based appliance for an analytics product that we call BI Accelerator, Business Intelligence Accelerator. It used to be Project Euclid. And we showed it last year at Sapphire. This year it is out in front of the customers. Customers absolutely love it. See 100x performance improvement on analytics queries. It's an appliance that we built together with Intel. It's prepackaged, Intel's blades, Intel's processors. Our software is pre-installed on it, optimized for the Intel platform. And IBM helps put the appliance together, and HP helps put the appliance together.
So as a senior executive here at SAP, not only looking at the 20-mile stare over the landscape and bringing that down to the troops, you also work internally to motivate some of the products.
Yeah.
Talk about the other guys like Oracle and Microsoft, other vendors that are kind of like SAP in the way that there's legacy involved, entrenched infrastructure, entrenched technology, where they have to make this huge shift. I mean, Microsoft clearly got .NET, and they have C# and all this other stuff that they got going on, and also their whole legacy software business. How do companies be successful in shifting like you guys are doing? I mean, what does it take?
We
just give up and shift, or just incrementally move it, or what?
No, we are. We find that when you have a footprint such as ours, that you have to do all of the above. We are constantly reinventing ourselves. We are constantly renovating on the things that we do. We look into new markets that we can apply, whether it is new industries, whether it is new market segments, mid-market, small business. We are constantly looking at what products can we offer. And I think one of the fundamental things, and you'll start to see this starting with Sapphire next week, is how do we constantly go through the cycles of simplifying ourselves, retargeting ourselves, working onto new market segments. And then you basically do apply the core and adjacency, or the innovation from the core, the disruption from within, you protect yourself against those types of things. So we are constantly looking into ways that we can better target ourselves to the existing customers. We can
serve new ones,
adjacent ones where we have an inherent advantage, things of that sort. So I mean, that's why you find us making heavy moves into the UI area, for example, into new market segments like the mid-market, We have actually been, our revenues in the mid-market have been growing significantly over the last 18 months or so. So that is the kind of, and I believe that Microsoft and Oracle and IBM and other companies, they have a similar, approach towards innovation. Oracle in particular, I believe, has a very significant challenge in front of them. Software integration of large bodies of software that was built by different people under different assumptions, is a fundamentally difficult problem, and there is no magic there. There is a lot
that's
of...
That's brute force.
That's just brute force. There is a lot of hype around what Oracle would do with Fusion, but if you just look at the basics of trying to integrate bodies of code that were built by, you know, J.D. Edwards developers and Oracle developers and PeopleSoft and Siebel.
It's a ton of work.
It's a ton of work. There's just no way
they
around
They try to
it.
Do that in what's their, about a year, right? They got to move an entire install base in about over a year.
Right.
What are their odds, in your mind? As if you had to, if you were there and you were leading the troops, are you like...
I think that they have to make a bet with one of those and then go with it. Because right now, if you look at just from CRM perspective, they have three different CRM applications that are major. At the end of the day, the people have been leaving. We have been hiring a lot of the key talent from these companies. We believe that at the end of the day, more power to them, good luck to them. But we think that they will not be successful in fusing together.
Well, there's two issues. One is actually pulling it off with Fusion. Right. But the other one is they're also moving with this whole service-oriented architecture. The whole SOA environment exposes these kinds of weaknesses. If they do a crappy job with the development,
absolutely.
It's going to be exposed very quickly. Yeah. You can't really hide that now.
Absolutely, you're absolutely right. And I think one of the additional challenges that Oracle has, in particular, is they have relied on the database as a platform for a good part of their existence. And
they milked it. It for a long time.
For a long, long time. And the whole idea of the database as the center of the universe. It sort of reached its peak, and even a lot of the big thinkers in the database community have started to talk about, one size fits all is an approach that doesn't work anymore. They have a lot of disruption from underneath that they have been trying to buy their way out of. But I think that you will see that in addition to the challenges with Fusion, they'll start to see some challenges over the next couple of years on just the core database business itself.
Talk about Oracle people. You've been hiring a lot of their key talent. What's the general consensus in your opinion about Oracle in terms of the morale over there? It seems to me like you've got Larry at the top, and obviously Ray Lane's gone. All their key lieutenants been moving on. Is it a shell of a company? Is there anything coming out of Oracle that impresses you?
Not really. They are a formidable company, and they have a formidable workforce, especially when it comes to their core database product. But we believe that being good at the database doesn't make you good at applications. They're fundamentally different businesses. And even though I see a lot of their core, the key application talent has moved on, they still have a good bunch of the code left to integrate. I don't see much innovation from them. They are a good technology company. They're a great technology company. But they have a huge challenge on the application side. And with the migration of talent that you see like this, I think that their job is that much more difficult. So,
you're working on a lot of stuff here, obviously. Can you give us a little taste of what kind of tricks you have up your sleeve? Any new stuff you're working on? You don't reveal any of the trade secrets, but
sure.
Looking out, the world's evolving. You're obviously nailing it with the SOA. Everyone's talking about it.
But, right.
Customers are going there. More choice, open source. It seems to be teed up.
No, we are.
Any,
we are.
Any new stuff coming out?
Absolutely. There are. You will see over time some of the very, very interesting stuff that we have been working on UI, for example. We think that is an area that we have not talked about a lot in the past. We think that with our expertise in business processes, that we have a great opportunity to rethink the way people interact with the business applications, what the business client looks like. We have been doing a lot of interesting work with Adobe on that. We think that over time, the whole idea of a business event becomes very interesting, that the SOA concept becomes more of an event-oriented architecture concept. And business events, you got a customer place an order, you might not have enough quantities in stock to fulfill that order. HR-related business events, financial business events, CRM events, these are all things that will become more and more finely granular, and I think that gives us some great opportunities to rethink the UI for the next generation of business. we are also
because the consumer behavior is changing. The users are behaving differently.
Absolutely.
It's not a siloed app anymore. They've got to work with multiple components.
Yeah. And the demands on the UI are at an all-time high. People expect a user experience to be great, and people work a lot with on the consumer side with websites like eBay and Amazon and the Web 2.0 mashup types of things. And so we have been doing a lot of very interesting work on UI that you will start to see in the very near future. We are also doing a lot of work in rethinking the data layer. I mentioned the BI accelerator product, which has a main memory based analytical engine inside it and no database. And so we think that there is a lot of interesting work to be done on that front.
You mean faster, just speed, just performance, right?
Yeah. And then the whole long tail phenomenon, I think that applies to the enterprise world in some very interesting ways. Some of the lessons from Web 2.0, I think that
let's talk about low Web 2.0 stuff, because obviously we're a big player in that, PodTech, but it's a different world, and the internet's unstructured.
Right.
You got unstructured data structure. Your enterprise, you got structured business silos,
processes,
you got business processes.
Right.
Talk about how that's changing and your vision there.
I think that is a fundamental divide. The world of structured business processes versus the world of unstructured business processes. People from Microsoft, Ray Ozzie, and those guys have talked a lot about this. We think that this is a very interesting fundamental divide that we are reaching. The work environment and the home environment, how these things interact, they get closer together. And I think the event thing that I alluded to earlier has a lot to do with how you consume information. And we think that
that further again.
So let us say, today, the primary consumption environment that you have in your life is Microsoft Outlook. Mm-hmm. You get an email in Microsoft Outlook. Typically, a business email would be something like, one of your employees needs a vacation approved. And the email itself has the body of this thing. But in order to resolve the event, you need to click on a link there and go to a portal and then go there and resolve the event. Well, we wonder, why can't you resolve the event inside the email itself, mm-hmm. right? What if you got a shopping cart that you have to approve, from your group? Typically, again, the email itself contains just a message. And then if you happen to be reading your email on a BlackBerry or on a Trio, you have nothing that you can do about taking care of that particular event.
Yeah.
We think that the ability to transmit the context of the event that you're looking at directly into your consumption environment, whether it is a BlackBerry or a Trio or Office or a web-based environment, that the event and the context of the event should travel with you where you are, and you should have the ability to resolve it right there. And I think that way you see a more of this unstructured, structured world sort of coming together.
That's when, just to tie it back, you mentioned earlier about Oracle having built software on the wrong assumptions. But the old model, that there was no real user interface assumptions. Pretty much people had terminals and they were just connected to computing.
Right.
So there was no real big issue there. But now what you're saying is you guys are really looking at it from, hey, that's the best scenario for the user and people.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's actually, why not build the software that way? So the Oracle example of having all this different software makes it harder to do this. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think we are a firm believer in making the business process reach out to where the user is, whatever context the user happens to be in. I have a BlackBerry. I think that looks like an iPad that you have there.
Mobile.
It's a mobile, it's a mobile device. And I think these are ultimately the consumption environments for these business events. So we think that you will be looking at your personal life related events as well as your business events in the same kinds of context. That's one of the big lessons of Web 2.0 for us. We also think that the whole idea of lightweight composition applies to the enterprise world very, very well. You see all the Google mashups, and the same kinds of things apply when you can mash up content and information from
it. It's breaking down those silos.
Absolutely.
Creating almost an info bus
underneath
the application layer.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, it's events, and we also look at it from an attention perspective. When users have attention, hit them there, right? That's what it's all about.
Yeah. Exactly.
Talk about business processes from a perspective of a developer. So you talked about Oracle and getting some of those key talent. For the developers now that are out there, what is the mindset of most of the developer community? Obviously, you're talking about the ecosystem. A lot of people pretty much are weighing in. It looks open source. A lot of efficiencies.
Right.
What's it like for a developer now, for the young guys coming up in the ranks and for the existing folks?
I think that it's a very exciting time to be a developer. We are just scratching the surface of model-driven architectures, where the layer of abstraction. I mean, I remember the time when we used to write assembler code and
debugging registers
and you know, and then new programming languages came around, Pascal and C and so on.
It was like writing.
Yeah, and you would, for the purist, it was a very difficult move to accept the compilers when you could be writing the assembler code yourself.
Yeah.
We think that for the programmer's world, and you know, programming languages have gone through some major renovation over the last 20 years. We have Java and scripting languages now, which have a lot of power, very easy to use, and a lot of flexibility. For example, Python and Perl and so on. And the world of model-driven architecture, especially in the business context, is just now emerging. So if you are a programmer, you know, looking at new approaches for modeling business processes, for modeling data, I think that there is a lot of exciting work to be done. Especially for business processes, you will see more and more of these modeling techniques, whether it is a high-level solution modeling that you do or modeling of the business process the way it is encoded in your logic, that there is a lot of exciting work. There are some interesting plugins now on Eclipse for business process modeling. So we think that it's a very exciting time to be a developer right now.
When you say modeling techniques, you mean just prototyping?
Not only for prototyping. Not only for design and not only for prototyping, but also for things like, doing a model of the application that you want to build. Being able to take advantage of approaches like MOF or the Eclipse modeling framework to do this type of a thing. Just pure model-driven architecture.
The efficiency is there.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, you can be finicky about assembler versus, you know, just, you know, writing it with a compiler.
Right.
It was easier.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, yeah, you didn't have control.
Right.
But it was easier.
Exactly. And that's the same thing. We think that the modeling tools will make writing the models easier and then having those models be compiled down into the different platforms. So I think that is something that is very exciting on the horizon. Scripting languages are another one. We think that that's a very some of the open source platforms like LAMP give developers a lot of opportunity to be creative and combine things up, especially with service interfaces exposed, to combine things up in ways that were never before possible. I mean, if you look at just the Google mashups, there are so many of them, Zillow, and there is crime-related ones, and all kinds of ways that people are rethinking that. And I think that is really making the power available to the programmer much, much more easily than.
And the crime one in Chicago was the one that won one of the awards at the Mashup Camp. We were there podcasting that, and it was interesting. They just basically just, it was an unsolicited, they just took open data sources and mashed it together, overlay on the maps.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you can see where the crime was in your neighborhood.
Right. It's amazing. I mean,
that's amazing. Utility for users.
Yeah.
So the benefits are just profound.
Right. And the underlying infrastructure being exposed to you as objects and services opens up the opportunities for the programmers to be that much more productive. I think that is the...
So this is all about creativity, opening up,
and
actually letting people develop solutions.
Exactly.
So no real projection of syntax and no real projection of what people think it is.
Right.
Expose base services
and
let people have choice.
Exactly. Exactly. Opening up, you know, unburdening the programmer from the things that they should not be worried about, and giving them more focus, more energy, more opportunity to do the things that they love to do and you know, make a difference.
How do people do that? I mean, how does a CIO who's scratching their head, how does a guy running a startup, how does someone doing a business like, even as an existing business like SAP, how do they start?
No, I think that, again, looking at, do you mean from a service-oriented architecture perspective?
Moving from a legacy model, whether it's how do I get a bunch of people developing an architecture for my startup to I'm a CIO, I got all this legacy stuff, and you know my maintenance budget's overseeding my headcount, and I need to do more with less and go open source.
I think that one of the fundamental lessons of life that we have seen in the last 20 years is that when you open things up, consumption actually increases. Our naive assumption is that when you open things up, you will become less powerful. That our normal tendency is to be a hoarder of information, to be a hoarder of knowledge. But that is, as it turns out, that is not the case. When you open things up, it becomes more powerful. You know, hybrid vehicles actually increase overall the consumption of gasoline, because when you have a more efficient mechanism available to you, you tend to do more things. This is one of the interesting aspects of life that we have found, especially in the IT world, that when you open things up, much more than what you ever expected ends up happening. And so I think within the IT department, within the CIO's world, I think there is a lot of interesting lessons to be learned from the Web 2.0 experience. The power of the community, the power of opening up the interfaces. How can you, you know, open things up to the world at large, to your world at large, and having them really make an impact on the kinds of things that have to happen.
I mean, impact, people's lives are changing. It's also, you know, with the Web 2.0 and the internet, it's a global world now.
Absolutely.
I mean, we, you know, people could put content out there, consumer-generated media, which we're doing now.
Right. Exactly.
It's pretty amazing.
And the same thing applies in different ways to the corporate world. There is a lot of knowledge that is locked inside. If you make things easy to find, you know, easy to break down, you know, you will really unleash the power of your IT department as well as your broader community inside the, you know, inside the enterprise.
Really. Yeah, it's a mini intranet. I mean, someone was asking me the other day. We were at Interopt, and they said, you know, what does enterprise mean? Because this was a young person. They didn't, and I actually had to step back and said, and what is the enterprise? And obviously, in context of the enterprise, that, you know, IT environment.
Right, right.
What's in your mind? What does that mean?
You can think of it as a miniature world with some additional constraints than the regular world. So in the real world, in our lives as consumers, as, you know, private citizens, we do a lot of interesting work. We do, you know, we shop, we do email, and we do comparison shopping, and we blog, and we write posts and things like that. And our world is governed by a certain set of rules and conditions and so on, laws and so on, things of that sort. But by and large, we are free to take advantage of the tools available to us in any way that we like. Well, the enterprise world is very similar to that. All of that applies. In addition, there are a few other things, however, that are different about the enterprise world. You have roles, you have hierarchies. IT departments typically tend to put additional structure on top of what you can do.
Privacy, security.
Privacy, for example, security.
Firewalls, DMZs.
Yeah, authorizations, things that you're authorized to see and you're authorized to share and things you're not authorized to share. The compliance that your company has to follow, compliance, the regulations, just the law. Depending on the industry that you are in, if you are in a healthcare industry and HIPAA kinds of rules, or in the financial, the Shareholder Information Act and things of that sort. So the enterprise world is largely similar to the regular world. It just happens to have some additional constraints on top of that, which you know, change the way you behave inside an enterprise. But I think one of the fundamental innovations that you will see over the next few years in bringing that enterprise world closer to the personal world is how those additional constraints in an enterprise world translate into your ability to use tools, your ability to use services that are available to you. And you will see more and more of this type of thing.
Well, you talked about this earlier, about from a software development perspective, the assumptions of the original enterprise were built with certain assumptions.
Right.
Not a lot of outside computing resources.
Right.
Now the assumptions are completely changed. Call it enterprise 2.0, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're now users coming to and from work,
right,
have computers at home, have devices, have mobile devices.
Right.
So how is this impacting the enterprise?
It is. So, I mean, the very nature of the enterprise itself, I mean, you see, as we are sitting here in the cafeteria, yeah, we see a security guy walk by whose job it is to keep SAP secure, and he's an employee of a different company.
He's checking out all the lights going off on my podcasting equipment. It looks like a, you know, could look like a bomb, but.
And similarly, you know, service providers that sit out in India or China provide services to you, and then shortly after they provided services to you, they turn around and they do that for your competitor and so on. And so really at the end of the day, the basic notion of an enterprise as a collection of people that are governed by a set of rules and compliance and regulations and so on, that is something that is that makes the concept of an enterprise unique. But it is also changing fundamentally. We think that more and more you will start to see enterprises, instead of these monolithic entities, as more loosely coupled conglomerations of, you know, pockets of expertise, where it might not be all stuff that you do. It might be stuff that you do together with dozens of other of core strategic partners that you have, that together come together to build a solution, to build a product, things like that.
In the old days, we called that an extranet.
Yeah.
Now it's the internet, right?
Right.
With some authentication.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you guys, that's your world. I mean, you've dealt with that in the enterprise. Now you're going to move that complexity out to a service architecture.
Right.
Hence why you're doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that the service enablement actually reflects a lot of the change in the notion of the enterprise itself. Being able to combine services. I mean, HR and payroll, for example. Within the HR application, a lot of the payroll with companies like ADP and so on, payroll services themselves get outsourced. And over time, you see more and more of this. People taking out chunks of business processes, doing them from elsewhere. That changes the nature of the IT implementations that you have. And again, having those be service-enabled makes it that much easier for you to deal with the fundamental changes that are happening in the business landscape underneath you.
My company, PodTech, we just recently got funding, and I just can't believe how fast and how different it is to do a startup because, I'm outsourcing everything.
Right.
I'm moving HR, finance, boom.
And over time,
it used to be really hard.
Absolutely. And as you grow your company, you will find that more and more you need to take ownership of some of those processes, but some additional processes go outsourced. And so as you start to depend on an IT infrastructure, you will want that IT infrastructure to be flexible so that as you change your business, the way your business operates, the way you make decisions about what to outsource, what to bring back inside, what to keep within, you need the flexibility in your IT infrastructure. And it goes back to the whole thing we started this thing on with the service-oriented architectures. Is the need to have these things be flexible is that much higher.
Yeah, because you want to be enabled to have the best environment, not be restricted by some syntax.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we're here at SAP in the cafeteria. Vishal Sikka, Senior Vice President of Architecture, CTO, Product Technology Group. Final question. 5 years from now, 10 years from now, what's going to be different about our world that we live in? How different will it be from a computing and from information utilities and global architecture?
I think that there are two fundamental ways in which our world will look different. One is the nature of the enterprise will be significantly different, I believe. The concept of an enterprise as a loosely coupled group of people coming together will be much more the case. If you look 10 years out, also the whole idea of the boundaries between what we do, where we do things will be a lot more blurred. I'll be able to do work together with my personal stuff in the same context more and more. It won't be like I go to my work screens when I am in the office and my personal screens when I am at home. I think that those boundaries will be a lot closer together. It will be a lot more meshed. And the second fundamental thing that I believe will make things interesting is the intersection of the physical world with the digital world, with RFID, with being able to look at things geographically, networks of sensors, things of that sort, becoming more and more plugged in to our digital world. I think will make things a lot more available, a lot more online, and I think that will be one fundamental change. If you look 5 to 10 years out, is how much more do you know about physical things, physical goods, things, just networks of sensors in buildings, and the Google Maps phenomenon sort of gives you a very small glimpse of what this thing can really be all about. But being able to link the physical world with the digital world will change things in a fundamental way over the next 5 to 10 years.
It's a transformation. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, final question. If you were to join any startup, what would it be? You're like working in a startup here at SAP. A lot of changes, a lot of excitement. But if you could, which startup would you join?
No, I think that there are some very interesting opportunities out in the in the unstructured, structured divide that you talked about, things like that. But I haven't yet seen a startup that is exciting enough for me to, drop what I'm doing.
Good
here
answer.
At SAP. Well, maybe Jeff can, think of something
what startup would you start?
Great stuff, Vishal. Thank you so much for the podcast.
Thank you very much.
Congratulations, SAP's got some great stuff, right direction, and good stuff. Thanks so much.